Welcome back. Welcome back to the dance party. My name is Joe.
And I'm Carolyn.
And you're in fact listening to the one and only Carolyn and Joe show. I can't believe we just started the show with that song, but you requested that song, Carolyn.
Yes, I did.
You're like, we need to listen. We need to have the show start with Destiny's Child.
I don't think you're ready for this jelly.
Not even just Beyonce, but full on Destiny's Child.
Well, the funny thing is when this music started, I honestly haven't heard the song in probably like six or seven years. They're like, are you ready, Kelly? Are you ready, Beyonce? I was like cracking up because I didn't remember the song ever starting out like that.
I wasn't really expecting this song to actually, I don't know. You know, I tried to fill in as many requests for opening tracks as we can because it sort of fits. And now she's pregnant. And now she's pregnant, guys and
gals.
Well,
you heard that for the VMAs, she actually was like emphasizing her bump because apparently, I guess like she's in her early stage of pregnancy.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like as visible. So like she was actually wearing like a fake pregnancy.
Fake pregnancy. I want to know who the father is.
I want to know who the father is. Better be Jay-Z.
It's Jay-Z. It has to be Jay-Z or it's Eminem. I don't know. It could be anybody. It could be you, Carolyn.
I'm pretty sure it's Jay-Z, because me and Beyonce haven't hooked up yet.
Hey, let's get right into the news. This is how I talk when I'm on the radio. In real life, I talk like this.
When I'm on the radio,
I'm like, hey, guys, what's up going on? Let's hear from
you
the news.
You don't even talk like
Let's that. Listen to the news. Welcome to the Carolyn Joe Show. Listen to the news by Carolyn Bilewski, curls-studio.com. Here we go.
We need to get like an old-fashioned like dun 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 dun.
Oh, like the
a newsreel.
What is it? WTOP. WTOP. Top of the hour news coming at you right now.
We need one of those things. So what do you think of this Bootylicious song? Is the title Bootylicious?
Yeah, it actually is Bootylicious.
See, because I was like, when I wrote you the email, I was like, we need to start off with, I don't think you're ready for this jelly.
And there's a reason for that, though. There's a story behind this. It's not just that we're just doing this.
After the news.
Yeah, after the news.
Okay, well.
From a word from our news sponsors. Here you go.
Your baby. All right, baby. Here's the news. Curl Studio will be at New York Comic Con, and we got our Artist Alley table assignment number. I haven't posted the map online yet, but go to curls-studio.com, and there might be a map sometime this week.
Or you can go to New York Comic Con.
I don't even know if New York Comic Con has their map, because sometimes like they let the artists know first.
I don't even know.
But just so you know, New York Comic Con is October 13th through the 16th. Yes, it is a four-day show this year.
4 days.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
That's right.
And we will be at B16.
B16.
This is how you can remember it. B, B, like the bumblebee.
Just go to the B aisle in the artist alley and you will see us somewhere.
And then
you'll
16,
see one of our...
like sweet 16.
That's
so remember,
right.
A B is having a sweet 16
bitchy
party.
A sweet 16. That's what it is.
That's, you got to remember that. That's how you're going to remember. Also, our other announcement is that we will be at Virginia Comic Con on October 29th and 30th.
That's right. Right before Halloween.
Two-day show. It's going to be spooky. And James O'Barr is the guest of honor. He is the creator of The Crow.
Someone, a character that you've just gotten into recently, so it's almost like perfect timing.
It is perfect timing because
You're fresh. You're beyond that 1994, 95 era of everyone being depressed. You can just absorb it for what it is.
I'm so fresh.
And that's really interesting.
You're
so fresh with it.
This is the thing. I know I'm 15 years behind. You can make fun of me all you want, but the thing is, I'm coming in with a fresh perspective on The Crow.
And I thought that was really interesting. You know, for one thing, was that like, I thought that was a massive, because you had those DVDs, you had the collector's edition
of The Crow for a long ass time.
You had it since college, right? You bought that while you were
in
college. At the end of college, yeah. And this is, you know, now is the time that you got into it. I don't even know how it happened that you watched it, but we're like,
what happened was, I have always wanted to watch the movie. I don't know even what grade I was in when the movie came out. When was that? Were we too young?
It was either 92 or 94.
Okay,
those seem very distinctive times.
We're probably too young to like really.
Me?
Well, I don't know about you, but
no,
like,
I was into The Crow when it first came out. Yeah.
No, but technically, you were probably too young for the movie.
What? I still saw it. We all saw it.
Well, I didn't. Is it rated R?
Yeah, it's rated R.
See, so you're too young for that movie.
Yeah, but everyone who was into like that was like part of the time.
See, but how come I wasn't allowed to watch that? Probably.
Well, it's a different lifestyles that we all led.
I'm just saying, I probably like at that time was not allowed to watch that, and so basically, I've heard of it like through somewhere, and I can't even like think of a person, place, or thing that told me about it.
I think just by pop culture. You know?
Yeah, just by pop culture told me about it. And then I saw it on sale at Plan 9 in Richmond. And I was like, oh man, I've always like wanted to see this.
Is that
like,
where you got it? I thought it was like, huh, I didn't know that's where it came from.
Yeah,
I must have forgotten.
It was like used at Plan 9. That's a fact, Jack.
Check it out. Look it up on Wikipedia.
It's a fact, Wolfman Jack.
Look it up on Wikipedia.
Anyway.
So yeah. So
I got it, and I don't know why, but I just... I've been pretty busy, and like I actually have a whole ton of movies that I haven't even watched,
and comics too.
Yeah, and comics. So like, I don't know. Like for me, like it's more of like, okay, I own stuff that I like, and I'll eventually get to it. So I guess recently, about maybe 3 months ago, I was just like, hey, let's watch The Crow, because like I haven't watched it, and I like have been dying to watch it for the past 15 years, and like. So we popped it in, and I immediately was like, yes, this is awesome. I love The Crow. And then we were watching like all the behind-the-scenes stuff for the collector's edition DVD, and then it had like an interview with James O'Barr, and I was like really struck by him. Like, I think that his life and the things that happened in his life really made who he was, and he poured so much of his heart and soul into like making the book.
But
even just the interview, I was like, wow, like this person, I like want to meet this person. So immediately when I got home, I was like looking at my touch before I went to bed, like, you know, grooving on the internet, and I went to his website. Also, I was like reading his Wikipedia, and I was like trying to find out, like, I was like, wow. How, like, because it seems so painful to really make a book like that, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like...
Well, tell him why. Tell the audience why it was painful for him.
Well, the backstory is, like, apparently when he was, I guess, in his late teens, maybe early 20s, he was, like, he found this girl that he really liked. You know, and it seems to me like that's a hard thing to do, actually, in life, even though it seems easy for some people, like, to find somebody that you really connect with. And I think he was actually engaged with her, and what happened was she was killed by a drunk driver. And the whole thing was just, you know, the whole predicament was, I guess, was kind of sad too, because like, you know, he was like, didn't he say I'll pick you up or something, and she's like, no, I'll go, you know, like,
yeah.
Basically, you know, it's not that it could have been prevented, it was more of just like a life event, you know, like,
yeah.
Like, for example, just now I went to the post office, like, I mean, I could have died, you know, like, but then it's like, well, what if I waited to go to the post office and like till after we did the show? You know,
yeah.
Like, or what if I didn't get it done earlier and I died later on? You know, stuff like that. It's like you can never tell, like, incidents that are going to happen, you know. So basically it was like kind of a freak accident to how his girlfriend died. And like that basically inspired The Crow. But then at the same time, it really sounded like he was going through a lot of issues, like internally, like, you know, because that can really mess you up, too, like mentally, even like. I mean, I don't know if he's religious or not, but just like, you know, your belief in God, like if God takes away like the one thing that really made your life, you know, and stuff like that, it gets kind of deep, you know? So it's like, you know, you start having issues, like, internally and just thinking about how you could have prevented that, you know, how you could have stopped that, or, you know, if anything, you know, there's nothing really you could do about that. It's just she was in the wrong place, wrong time. And so anyway, so then he made the crow kind of based on that, and, you know...
Well, he made the crow based on a character that would have, you know, rectified that.
Yeah. But it was still from that emotion. And just, like, I know it's hard to make comic books in general, but just, like, it seemed like his story was just a lot of elements to it. Then in addition to it, like, from the business side,
but all, like, even the main female character was based off of her.
Yeah.
Like, the design and everything, all the elements.
And but even from a business standpoint, too, like, there's multi-layers of why I'm, like, kind of into this whole crow thing right now, is that, first of all, there's the movie side of it, and there's, like, the Brandon Lee thing about, like, how he died on set, too.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, if you can think about it, like, oh, well, you know, if he wasn't making the film, he wouldn't have died. And in addition to that, wasn't he, like, 2 weeks away from marrying his girlfriend?
Yeah.
Or he was very, very
in
close.
In that vicinity, yeah.
Like, basically, like, getting married very, very soon to his girlfriend. And, like, you know, you can, like, maybe I'm thinking too much about it, but I'm kind of wrapped into this whole story. But it's like, if you were that girl, you were, like, first of all, you already are, like, engaged to, like, a really hot guy who's awesome. And then it's like, then he dies, you know? So it's like, I don't know. Like, I feel, like, bad for her too, you know what I mean, like, just to be in love with somebody that much. And they were, it sounded like they were, like, really into, like, getting married.
Yeah.
And then, like, and then also, like, the way he died, it's, like, questionable. Like, apparently there was a loaded gun on set, but, like,
they're shooting blanks and stuff like that. There's a huge mystery behind that, whether there was, it wasn't like a bullet, but like a shard that was ejected from the gun itself.
Oh, it wasn't a bullet?
Well, it was like a piece, you know?
Oh.
It's like, say, like, you shoot blanks and something got, like, stuck in the actual gun.
See, that's such a freak accident, too. It's like, really?
I don't know if that's... I mean, personally, but that's, yeah, like, what I researched at that time.
See,
supposedly.
I haven't gone into, like, full-on research about it. But I just, you know, just knowing, like, certain things, that's like, wow, that's... Like, if you think about stuff, then from James O'Barr's perspective, he's like, oh, no, now another person died because of the, you know, because of the crow, you know, like...
But the first one didn't die because of the book.
But I'm just saying, but it's like...
There's a darkness that overlings with...
But I'm saying, like, it's a snowball effect. It's like, well, if his girlfriend didn't die, he would not have made a crow. He would not have, you know, might not have inspired him to make a full-on comic book.
Just slow down a little bit. You're rushing through.
I understand, but there's just so much going on.
Slow it down.
Okay.
And let the audience... we're giving you this opportunity to let it out, so you don't have to rush. Just slow it down and tell the story, like, the way you want to tell it.
I'm just saying that there's a whole lot of elements going on. You know, like, if it wasn't for James O'Barr's girlfriend dying, he would not have made such a great comic book. Then, if he wouldn't have made such a great comic book that was turned into a movie, then Brandon Lee died because he was making the movie. It's like a snowball effect of elements that could be prevented, but could not be prevented, but it's very strange, like, combined.
But was this the main reason why you wanted to watch The Crow? Because let's rewind to the fact of, like, first you just, because a lot of people these days have already seen The Crow, and, like, for years, so they had those moments, like, I remember people, like, in high school when they saw that, they wanted to be The Crow, they wanted to dress in black like that, even, like, Sting from professional wrestling, when his character turned to a new leap, he was basically The Crow. The Crow is this awesome, iconic character, and what's harsh, or what's refreshing is that, like, we've held back for you watching this. You had ideas of what it was, but you didn't know, I mean, you didn't know if it was cool or bad and stuff like that, and it's interesting for you to actually be absorbing this for the very first time, and a lot of people don't get a chance to do that. But I remember The Crow, like, being massive. Like, it was, like, that already is such an iconic character, you know what I mean, at least with that first movie. And, like, just everyone wanted a piece of that. People were buying the books left and right. They just, you know, they felt something from that. You know, it's like basically imagine coming back, you know, it's, you know, like the Dark Avengers. The Crow brings a person back to basically avenge the death of a loved one, you know, and that's something that connects. But I just remember that such a good time. It was like, to me, like, you know, when you see people talking about death, then you have the character of death, like from Sandman, wearing all black and all white, you know, black and white, you know, like this goth thing or whatever, you know, it did sort of bring that back up. It had a bit of that. But to me, like, yeah, black could always symbolize death, but I always felt like with death, the character, even the crow, it was almost in a way symbolizing like life.
Yes.
And that's what a lot of people who don't get it don't realize, that maybe sometimes that's what the black is. It's like, it's the opposite. But yeah, let's bring back to the story of like how you first heard of the crow, and then, you know, when you, well, let's talk about how when you first started watching it.
Well, I honestly can't remember if there's a person, place, or thing that told me about the crow, but I remember
the word
I
of mouth though was there for you. It was like, already there. It was established.
Yeah, but I didn't know like the full story. Like, I didn't know that it was about like the actual author's life experience and then making it into a book and a story. So I feel like the whole thing basically made a complete circle for me after I saw the film, and I enjoyed it so much that I wanted to watch the special features. And that,
well, let's talk about the film first, then we go to the special features. Since, let's dedicate this time, you know, like when you're watching the film, you know, what was the impressions you're getting out of the crow, basically? Because this is fresh. This is also Alex Paraeus, you know, who did Knowing. I think that's another connection. Like, we saw Knowing before that as well, or around that time, and I was like, that guy made the crow. And then, you know, we saw that, and he also did iRobot. He also did Dark City.
I never saw iRobot.
But that's like, you know, those are like these. He has like a set look at that time. But yeah, while you're watching the crow, I mean, let's feed it through. Like, what were you expecting?
Well, I was expecting it to be dark, and then I knew that there was this guy with face paint and, like, a trench coat, and then he had a bird probably, like, on his shoulder. Like, his little, like...
Like his friend.
His little pal that, like, yeah, would investigate for him or something. Because they can see from above.
Yeah.
So, I thought, I knew about, like, that look, and I knew that there was probably bad guys and stuff.
Yeah.
So... But I didn't know about, like, his whole thing with the girl is Shelley.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know about that character.
Now, what actually made The Crow, like, the movie cool for you? Because there's a lot of things. Like, there's some people that might dislike it, might not like it. But what made you like, actually, the movie? Because, like, knowing the backstory, that, to me, that doesn't really matter unless the story itself was something that you enjoyed. And what was something that, you know, you felt like you connected with the movie? I mean, I know one of the first things we commented on, we always drew it back into wrestling. So the first battle sequence, the first fight sequence they had was basically a black Sting. Guy with dreads. And I was like, that's Booker T.
Booker
and
then T versus Sting.
Sting versus Booker T was in,
yeah,
there.
Yeah, we were like, Booker T versus Sting. And then, like, those other guys were, like, really bad guys, and they're into, like, drugs and stealing stuff. And then they were in the pawn shop. Like, I was like, those guys are bad guys that mess up other people's lives. Like, other people are just going about their daily routine, and then, like, they just mess up other people.
And also, you know, the movie takes place in Detroit during, Devil's Night, where they basically just tear up the city, you know, like, the night before Halloween, which is basically when we're going to also see James O'Barr Devil's Night, Halloween, so that could
That's
be pretty
crazy.
Interesting, too. So that,
that's,
I mean, that's gonna be, we're booked for the same show as James O'Barr, so that's always gonna be cool. But like, that's the one things I really liked about The Crow. One was also like the visuals, like, of the movie itself was, you know, you gotta take into account, this is like way before people were taking comic books serious, you know what I mean? And like, to me, like when I watched that, I was like, this is, you know, yeah, Batman Returns just came out, and, you know, the first Batman came out, but when you see The Crow. And at the same time, I was watching, like, Batman the Animated Series around that same time. I was like, this is how a dark superhero is done, man.
That's Batman should be, you know?
Like, when I was thinking that, I was like, this is how that the next level of Batman should have been.
Like that's kind of how The Dark Knight was, like, 15 years later.
Yeah, exactly. Like, in my head now, I'm looking at it, I'm like, well, they already did that with The Crow. They hit the right emotional points, and the music was beautiful. And also, like, for one thing, The Crow would not be anything at all if it wasn't for freaking motherfucking Brandon Lee, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's a, it,
well,
like, to me, that was like equivalent.
Too.
That was like equivalent to, like, Heath Ledger doing the Joker. Like, he fully engulfed in the character that you lost Heath Ledger, and this one you lost who Brandon Lee was.
Yeah, that's that is a major thing too. Another thing about the visual look of the story and set design, I really did enjoy their house that was like out the corner, and then they had that window with the circle.
Yeah.
Like, just the window with the circle, I felt was very symbolic.
See, that's cool, because that's actually, like, a motif that Alex Piraeus has, like, in all of his movies. Like, in the what's it called? The circular center. That was, like, really, like, a motif that he's had. It's, like, one of his things.
And we actually use that in the new Black Magic Tales story that we worked on for Indie Comics Magazine #4. It's a Christmas issue.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool, too. And now that I think about it, I'm like, oh, that's kind of like the Crow. But, like, I really did also like how he had an animal. It's kind of like Black Magic Tales, too.
Yeah.
The cat.
Yeah.
Wow. Like, I feel like it's inspiring that some of our stuff overlaps.
I mean, it does come back. I mean, like,
I mean, I'm sure other people have done it before. It's not, like, as new. Like, even in Quest for Camelot, I think it was Warner Brothers made,
or like,
that movie.
Or Beastmaster.
Like, Quest for Camelot was pretty light, though, but the main guy character, his name is Garrett, and he is blind, and he had, like, a little bird that, like, saw for him.
Yeah.
But he was, like, straight up blind. He had a walking stick cane thing, but the bird basically saw his vision for him, but he knew, like, the Force. He knew, like, all of his surroundings. And I thought that kind of reminds me of the Crow. Just because, I guess it's like the bird thing and having an animal navigate for you. But yeah, but like the Brandon Lee comparison to Heath Ledger's is pretty close. And it's kind of sad. Like, but even actually, I feel actually worse for Brandon Lee because he died like on set. It's kind of like semi uncalled for, you know? Like, whereas like Heath Ledger's death also could have been prevented, but it was more of like on his end.
Yeah, he didn't die on set.
Yeah,
you know,
see,
what I mean?
Like, that's a big difference.
And I specifically remember hearing that, like, I was watching Entertainment Tonight, hearing that, like, Brandon Lee died in his movie of The Crow, how they had to, like, you know, like, digitally put him in, like, to fill in those spots, or they had to, like, re-edit some stuff as well. They had to take away some, or some parts of the story. I'm not really clear about that right now. But, that's part, you know, when you first watched. It's like when you were watching, or at least when I was watching The Crow, like, the first time, to me, it was like, wow, I'm watching a dead man on screen. You know what
really?
I mean? And that almost...
Did you see it in
that,
the theaters?
That almost, in a sense, like, brought it to, like, a new level of, like, this is, like, it's almost like a spiritual journey in which you're watching, like, someone who basically died for this movie. And to me, I was like, you know, that's why they finished the film, too, because they put it in his memory. They got to finish it. Because he's put in such an amazing performance,
yeah,
that they're like, I mean, yeah, it feels down, and there's
like
a big,
they have to,
you know, they named a street after Brandon Lee and around, like, the, because they shot that in, like, Screen Gems or whatever was Screen Gems at that time down in North Carolina. And
really?
Yeah. And so you can go over there and you can actually be, like, in the lots where they did that, and you can they have a street named after Brandon Lee. And it's pretty nuts, but also it's like they made it because he did such an awesome job, and it was poetic in a way, the way you see that, like those scenes where he's playing guitar like at night, or just everything he did, how it was there was a menace to him, but there was also a joy to his performance.
Yeah,
you know, and I thought that was really, it was amazing. And also there's such a positive message too, like that one scene where he goes to, remember that girl, you know, Shelley's friend, that little girl that was like the sidekick, yeah. How her
the,
mom,
like, street kid.
Yeah, like, yeah, like, I love the street kid aspect
was,
of things. There's not enough of that today.
And also because, like, actually that's, it's kind of, the whole movie is really before its time, because, like, nowadays.
Well, it's actually very now, I felt, too, at that moment, because that.
No,
me,
you mean, like, watching it 3 months ago?
No, like, back then, it was, I felt like that was, like, now, you know, that was, like, it hit it on the nose, what people needed.
But then, at the same time, I still feel like it's, like, breaking new ground today.
Well, it's bringing it, like, you can see it comes in a cycle.
Because, like, you know, nowadays, like, you don't really see many girls, like, portrayed that way. You know,
like
oh,
a street tough.
Yeah, with, like, oh, you know, she has her skateboard, and she's, like, you know, you feel bad for that character too, because she's out there at like probably 11 at night or midnight or something, and like her mom is like some crackhead.
But that's like a girl that would be like totally into who, if Roxy and Dean were real, she'd be like,
yes,
that's who my heroes are, screw you, you know?
So, like, I see a lot of overlap with our Black Magic Tales characters with the Crow. I mean, it's not like a straightforward ordeal, but there's There's things where, like, it could live in that world.
But I felt like it did have such a great message, you know what I mean, of just cherishing love. And because, you know, that was a great scene where everything was about pain in that movie, and also pain and life. And that was I felt that was something that was around that time, like, a lot. You know, I felt like, you know, that's how it was when you're going through that pain of growing up and stuff like that. That's,
did you see
that's why you had the
theaters?
Kid there. Huh? I actually don't remember if I saw it in theaters or not. I remember seeing it on time, so I might have seen it at the theater.
You
I did
snuck in with the R rating.
I don't think if I had to do that or not. I mean, like, I did see a lot of R-rated movies back in the day, you know, back when I was under 18 or whatever. It was a way of life, man. It was just, those were the better movies, because I wasn't really into those Disney movies. I was a lot of singing. I was like, yeah. You had that. I mean, that's even, I think even when Lawnmower Man or Johnny Mnemonic or Tank Girl was out during that time. You know, those are, so, like, the time that those comics came out, like, I don't know, I have a great feeling. Like, I really feel, I have a nice soft spot for when those books came out. Like when the Tank Girl age, when I really felt like, wow, these are underground indie books. Instead of now, where it's like the underground art, you know what I mean? Back then, it's like, oh man, like, I can't hope someone doesn't catch me with this book. You know, that was, to me, when, like, you actually had a comic book that was almost like a weapon. Like, when you're like, holy crap, like, this kid, what if someone reads, like, you know, what if someone finds me to, you know, what if someone, like, sneaks in? You know, that's why I felt about Stray Bullets, when you have such a palpable, like, danger comic. You know, I felt like that's such a cool feeling to have. And I felt like there were books and artists back there that were like that. We're like, oh my God, I can't believe this.
Is there,
like, that's how I got
like
it.
That these.
Well, I just feel days? I just feel like the curtain is pulled back. You know, back then, you know, that's why Frank Miller was. That's, I mean, you have a lot. I mean, you say what you will about Frank Miller these days, but he broke all the rules back then to get his books out.
I still think I stand up for Frank Miller for the most part. You know, like, I guess
it's more like his contemporary work. People.
Well, people got mad at the spirit.
Well, it's also just like, you know, people didn't like his later works and stuff like that. It was just too self-indulgent. But back then, that dude was a badass to have around, because, like, every inch, I mean, every part of his book was about bringing it back, you know, telling those harder stories and getting it out there. And, you know, that's where the world where The Crow came from, too, is you telling a harder underground story.
So at that time when the book was out, was it really a big deal as a comic? Like, were people, like, I don't know how to judge it, but, like, were people in comic book stores going nuts about it? And, like, was it selling out, or, like, selling out in the way that, like, a lot of people were buying it?
I'm not quite sure. Because, like, really, I only heard of the book when the movie came out. And I was like, okay. It's from a book. And then, of course, that's the time when it comes in. Because also, it's like, during those days, you're like, holy crap, they're making a comic movie.
Because from what
even
I,
worse, even it's even less than today.
Because also from what I could tell, it's like he was working on the project, and then his local comic store was like, "Oh, this is really good. Like, we should publish it."
Yeah.
So that's like kind of what gave him some support, I guess, financially. And it was pretty much just like, I don't know, two or three guys in the back of like a local comic store, like making the book and shipping it out.
That's crazy. Like that. That's what I feel like. That was like the danger of that time of like, that's where you're like, holy crap, I can't believe, you know, that fresh aspect of people doing a comics on their own. Because now I feel like everyone does comics on their own. Anyone can have anything at that.
Well, I mean,
but
really,
now, like back then, I felt like, wow, it was even more riskier to do something like that. So they really had to make it freaking count.
I feel like people's comics these days don't have that type of emotion of heart. You know, like, people can make good comics these days, but sometimes I don't feel, like, as emotional about it. Whereas The Crow, like, when I was saying in the beginning of our podcast, when I was talking all fast, I feel like The Crow, like, basically says so much about also, like, his personal life. I mean, maybe I feel like also some of the most beloved creators in comics are really loved as a person. Also,
yeah,
like you feel like there's more emotional investment rather than like you're just reading a book and you have no connection to the author. In fact, you might not even know the author's name, stuff like that.
Yeah,
so I feel like by him putting so much of himself, of his soul out there, it adds an extra layer. Like, there's so many layers of the reasons why I enjoy The Crow.
And I have, this is just based off of the first movie.
And the other thing
other two ones I wasn't as hyped up about at all.
First of all, I haven't even seen the other two movies. Second of all, I'm only about 25% into reading the book. Because after I saw the movie, I was like, well, I know this is a comic book. I was like, I need to get the book. So then I went looking for the book, and we went to two or three comic stores, and they didn't have any of The Crow.
Yeah.
We're like, we need The Crow.
But also another sense of timing.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting. What I'm getting at is that just like, I guess maybe a month ago, the book came out, like special edition book came out. And so I was like, oh, this is perfect. You know, because like, think about it. And also, I guess he like changed certain, I read the introduction too. Like he changed certain pages the way he would want it to be originally. Then also he said, since it's been like, whatever, 15 years, he's like lost pages and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so like, he had to actually redraw some of them. Like they didn't, I don't know why they didn't have the files or whatever. Or I guess it was so back in the day they didn't have certain files, or maybe they were. I don't know.
I don't even know how you would make a comic back then.
Well, like, no, because these days we scan. Plates.
Yeah, these days we all scan everything. We have the files, but back then it's like before. We didn't even trust digital technology yet.
No,
we were
afraid
of T-1000.
I'm assuming like they must have had printing plates, and maybe like one of the page. I don't know how many was lost, but like maybe some of the pages got lost, or the printing plates. Because think about it. I don't know if he kept the plates or if the printing press kept the plates.
Yeah.
Because sometimes what happens is, from what I've heard, the press can keep the plates, but who knows how, like, structured their archives is, you know? Like, even Dave Sim in the Guide to Self-Publishing, he talks about how he keeps his own plates.
Yeah.
Just to be safe. But it's like, you know, what if you're missing a page or something? And then, I don't know. I guess apparently James O'Barr had to redo some pages or fix up some pages the way he wants it, so that it's basically like the, you know, the artist creator's edition of special edition of The Crow. And so I'm only like, you know, maybe 20 or 25% into it, so I haven't even really dug into the heart of that too. So it's, I want to though before the end of October, before we go and actually meet him, because I just want to like say hi to him and get him to sign the book. But it's like I want to be able to read all of it before then. But I'm just saying, I haven't even like dug into all of The Crow. And part of me was wondering, like, should I even bother watching the other movies without Brandon Lee?
I mean Brandon Lee to me had a lot to do with just the beauty of that first movie, you know, like just everything about that. The other ones, you know, they're different, but also you just, you know, it's lacking. I don't know. I watched one and I was like, that was it.
See, I don't even know if I should. See, because
I don't think, personally, Carolyn, I don't think you should taint the vision of it. Don't watch them.
Because part of me, it's like, oh, I like The Crow so much, maybe I should watch those so I can encompass all the worlds. But then part of me is like, oh, I do like what I already saw, so maybe I just want to read the book and watch the
They're different directors too, so it's not even Alex Paredes doing it. So visually, it's different. Like I say it stops right there. I say like
just read the book,
take it for that, let it end on a high note.
And then I want to rewatch the movie. And also
they don't even have a Blu-ray of the movie.
They only have the collector's edition that I have.
Yeah.
Yeah. And no, but the best thing is too, after I saw the movie, I'm like, I need to read the book. This guy is amazing. And then I was looking online and they didn't have it anywhere, and then we went to the like two or three comic stores and they didn't have it anywhere. And then I found out, I was looking online, and then they said the collector's edition is coming out, and I was like, oh man, this is awesome. So then we had Steve order it from Laughing Ogre.
Yeah.
And then he was all like happy when he gave me it.
Really?
Yeah. He's like, here's your Crow book. But like, I don't know, man. It's just, and I haven't even seen the book on really stands either.
Neither have I.
So it's like, and that just came out, and that's like a, I don't know, to me it's like a big ordeal. And apparently also James O'Barr has another book out that was like available digitally, I think. I don't even know the name of it, but I think it was a Western. So I might get into that too.
That's cool.
Find out what that's about.
Westerns are always good.
Yeah, I've been into the Western. But you know what, actually, I'm trying to think of what inspired me to actually see the movie after owning it for so many years. Was we were at Capcom's, I believe, and some guy wanted a Crow commission.
Oh yeah, that's right.
That's what inspired, because then I was like, oh, The Crow's cool. Like I totally haven't seen the movie yet even. And this guy was like super into The Crow. He was like, if you do a really good job, I'll get a tattoo of it. Like, cause, and he had a whole sketchbook, and even the cover of the sketchbook had The Crow on it. Like it was a official Crow sketchbook.
Yeah.
and had like a picture of the crow on every page, like in the little corner, like pre-printed on there. But then like he was like showing us all of his tattoos he has of the crow. He had like several. But then like that made me kind of intimidated because I'm like, damn, I better do something good so I can like have this guy get a tattoo of it. But it was kind of hard, you know. His book had, he probably had like 100 crow and illustrations in there for commissions.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, if somebody's that hardcore of a fan, like, I think that that's when I was like, man, I need to see the movie now, officially.
Because you know you've reached a great level when you have people like that. When you do have books of your characters like that, like, people are doing sketches of your characters and people are getting tattoos of your character that you created. You know you've reached that level.
Yeah. And even, like, no, I knew about, like, Sting from Impact Wrestling. Like, I knew that he had his look modeled after the crow. There's certain things, like, I knew, I guess, from, like you said, pop culture about the crow. But it really was all-encompassing after... The movie is freaking damn good.
Yeah, it's a freaking brilliant
but
movie.
I think it's awesome because it does stand... Like, you said it, like, you know, it was now, like, 15 years ago. Like, it was at its at that time period. But then even watching it now, literally now...
It's timeless.
It's timeless
at this point.
Like, it does feel like... I mean, yeah, it did look like, you know, there's certain things that was older. Like,
I mean, look what happened
it,
after that.
At the same time, I enjoyed it. Like, I didn't think, I was like, oh, this movie has bad effects. It's old. You know, I didn't think of that. I mean, I was like, this is good.
I mean, that movie really branched out. You know, you had more books made after that, had more movies and even a TV show. So, I mean, like, how far can it go at this point? That's really...
But also, you know, maybe I'm thinking about too much.
I would like to direct a crow movie. Let's see what happens if I do that.
That'd be crazy. Who would you cast?
I don't know.
No, they are making a crow movie.
They are?
Yeah. I forgot to say. I think it's coming out next year, or it might be in production now. The guy from The Hangover. The guy that everyone thinks
is
hot. Oh,
yeah. Or whatever. I remember that.
What's his name? Bradley Cooper?
Yeah.
And apparently he's dating J Lo now.
I thought he dropped out of doing that. I'm not sure.
Oh, he dropped out?
I don't know.
You know what? I don't have anything against Bradley Cooper, to be honest with you. Like, I guess, like, when I saw The Hangover, I thought, you know, I was like, oh, you know, it was a good movie. And then, like a day later, I looked him up on the internet. I was like, who's that guy? Because I didn't know his name. And I was like, I guess he was, like, the best one from the movie. Like, you know, that character I guess I enjoyed the most. And then, like, but I guess I thought he was hot for, like, a couple days. But then now that I think about it, I'm not saying he's ugly or anything, but I'm just not as into him anymore. And I don't really picture him, like, as the crow. Like, to me, he's, like, too light.
Well, that's like, the thing. There's that thing is that it's the transformation is what really happens.
Yeah.
You don't know until the transformation happens. So, yeah, so I thought that was perfect timing because, one, we just finally someone asked you to do a sketch in a crow book. After that, then you first finally watch the movie. Boom, after that, a new edition of a book just happens to come out during this time.
Yeah, it just happened to come out.
And then, boom, another one that we're booked on the same comic convention as James O'Barr at Virginia, at the Virginia Comic-Con in Richmond, Virginia.
On the day before Halloween.
Yeah, on the day of Halloween. It's like, this is like a complete package right here.
Oh, my God.
Complete package that, you know what, it's so happy. We go from New York Comic-Con to doing that. I mean, this is our first comic convention in Richmond. So I hope people know that we're, you know, this is our first one and we went to school there. So it's sort of like, this is our return. And I hope it's pretty awesome. You know,
I'm really excited though, because like, I mean, really what made me want to do the show is that James O'Barr is going to be there.
That was sold. I was like all right, we'll be there.
Like I was like, all right, we definitely have to be there because this is the crow. Like,
I was like, okay, sign us up. We're there.
I am interested in his like current stuff. See what's up with him. Like as a person, he sounds like a really interesting guy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like I said, he puts it all out there. So I wonder how he's like in person. It's kind of like intimidating though, to be honest with you.
Well, I guess we'll find out. So we were on the Jellyvision show like last week.
I don't think you're ready.
Another show that we were on. First it was the Mocast. Well, how do you pronounce that? Mocast?
Mocha?
Was that the cast?
It's the Menagerie of Kickassery.
Yeah, we were on that, and then we're on the Jellyvision show. But this was where you streamed live on
TV.
Yeah,
this is the first time we were ever on Ustream.
And we'll put a link to it.
I still haven't watched it.
I haven't watched it yet either, but we'll put a link to it, you know, on our page. So what are your feelings towards that?
I thought it was really fun. Like, it was pretty rad. Basically, I think we mixed well with the hosts, Jennifer and Tim. They're pretty funny. They basically start their show off with, like, basically whatever they think is funny, and they just rant about stuff, and then they have this segment, I guess, called Coffee Time or something like that. And then they, you know, they have, like, little segments, and it's just, like, their opening for a few minutes, and we were the first guests on. We were on for a while.
Were we?
I felt like we were, I mean, I didn't time
it. Did you have a different persona on, like, from being behind this mic, your mic, and then being live and in person? Oh, also, also before that, on SPX, we were on the Full Sanction show, like, on there, too. So we've been just trying to knock out as much press as we can.
I know. We've been on, like, 3 different podcasts / talk shows in the past 3 weeks.
And I hope we do more, because I really enjoy doing this. To me, this isn't just something, like, doing these shows, and doing any show isn't just like, oh, you're doing press. To me, that's almost like, that's a new project. Like, that moment. Yeah. Like, this is, like, almost like a live performance art thing that happens right here. Like, I don't think of it as just, like, a throwaway. I'm like, wow, this is a moment to create history.
Yeah, so if you want us on your podcast, you can email info@curls-studio.com.
That's right.
Get in touch with us.
So, yeah, so Full Sanction was cool. Hang out with Joe and Rusty at SPX. SPX was fun, you know?
Yeah.
Then we did the Jellyvision show. That's the same, the whole reason why we had the Bootylicious going on there.
I don't think you're ready for this jelly. Because I wanted that song when we left the stage.
Yeah.
But I requested it way too late. Like, it was a last second thing. I was like, oh, can we get that? They're like, no. But I did like that show. I liked basically how it was so raw. Like, it's like our show. Because we don't edit the Carolyn and Joe show. We just go raw. Like, over the music and everything. We have our music bed. But, like, basically, I really enjoyed how it was just completely raw. Talked about everything. Tim was even talking about how he likes to pee on stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, he went a little bit crazy with the pee.
Yeah.
But it was all good, you know. But I think, like, when we got to our section, I think that our interview went well, and we even took a phone call. It was pretty cool that somebody called in.
See, I'm always interested to find out, like, when I first, you know, I mentally, when I go into, like, these interviews or podcasts like that, I don't really have subjects I'm going to talk about, but I always find it interesting on where I can lead things to go.
Yeah.
And I'm always sort of divided on, am I going to take this as a serious interview, or am I going to go into sell mode, or am I going to go as into just, let's have a fun podcast and let's drive on, like, you know, like Carolyn Joe show, let's drive on any conversation we can.
I usually try to go on the fun angle, but then I will try to find a way to work in a plug.
Yeah.
But it's, like, a way that's fun, not just being like, this is an advertisement.
Yeah.
Ovaltine. A crummy commercial.
You know, it's funny because, like, I was on, like, even, like, back in the, several years ago, I was on another, like, talk show in Richmond, like, the Herschel show or something like that, where they misspelled my name. You know, and they were throwing questions at me, and I didn't know how to, this was before the podcast. And this actually might have been a reason why I was like, I need to get better at public speaking or something like that. And they asked me a question, like, or Herschel asked me a question. So, what do you do for Richmond? Or, yeah, what do you do for Richmond? And in my head, I was like, how am I supposed to answer that?
Was this when you still lived there, or when you were driving up and down all the
time? When I was driving up and down all the time. So, what do you do for Richmond? And I was like, am I supposed to talk about Project Resolution, like what I do, or my filmmaking career down there? Or, you know what I mean? It's like, those things bowed in my head. But now I realize it's just to have whatever question it is, just answer it with something fun, you know, and just lead into a story of some, like, have a bit of entertaining, but lead, you know, like, for at least for me, I want to have it just be captivating in some form, you know what I mean? Even you can even have dramatic pauses like this, and then you can even come back, you know what I mean? It's like a refresh.
Wow.
but just like, I never want to have, like, a moment of just like just stupidity in my head, even though, unless it's something pre-planned. Like, I didn't want to have, because my mind blanked at that moment. So, what do you do here? I guess, because I get, like, voice messages.
Was that ever recorded?
It was recorded. I don't know where it is, though. I don't know where half of the stuff that happens. But also, it's sort of like, I get a lot of voice messages sometimes from people that are like, hey, man, okay, yeah, so,
okay,
I'm thinking about it. And I'm just like, really? I don't want to come off like that. I really don't.
I promise you. I don't think we do.
All right.
I still feel like on our radio show, like on the Carolyn and Joe podcast that you're listening to right now, I feel like we are a little bit more laid back. Like, it's a conversational tone. We're not like, hey, it's an interview. What's up, guys? Like, as much.
I mean, there comes a point where we just have to stop doing that, because if we're over, you know, we're almost to 140. This might even be 140, but
it's more like change up. It's more like we just have a conversation with each other.
Yeah. It's a conversation plus a performance for people at home.
Also, like, sometimes when I'm recording Carolyn and Joe Show with you, there are certain moments where, like, I don't even realize that I'm speaking on, like, a recording.
So, like, on the Jellyvision,
get into the zone.
On the Jellyvision, I was always interested, like, you know, at one section in the beginning, I was like, huh, so should I top his peeing antics? You know what I mean? Should I try to go as vulgar as that?
I don't think you should compete with comedian in that sense.
No, but
you
like, see, in my head, it's like, I think,
like,
immense,
how far you wanna
I truthfully
go.
Think in my head, I can do damn good improv.
You I'm know not what saying I, that you can't, but I'm saying,
no, I'm not
like,
saying, I'm not saying, I wasn't questioning you,
yeah,
or that, but like, in my head, I'm like, well, if you want to do improv with me, I can shoot with improv as well as the best of them.
See,
you know
but
what
you
mean?
Come in from the pro wrestling side of that.
I come in from the storytelling side of that.
Yeah, that
but I go
with
pro,
pro
but the pro wrestling brought out the comfortableness of it, to being able
like
to
shooting a promo,
yeah, or just being comfortable, like having to do something live. That doing that, and also with like the many hours I was like the host of Project Res, like I feel like because that I'd be in front of a live audience and I barely had anything prepared, but I had to get them going. I feel like with and a lot of that, and then having to sell and just gravitate, I feel like, you know, those things combined, I can grow upon that and run with anything. And also, everyone I'm usually surrounded by are a bunch of sarcastic motherfuckers. So it's always like, hey, so sarcasm, 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 blah, 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 sarcasm. It's just a bunch of topping.
It is.
It is.
But, like, I guess what I'm saying is with Jellyvision, I really did enjoy the rawness of it. We just kind of went for it. And
what was the moment that you enjoyed the most? Or that was what was elements that you enjoyed of being on there?
I liked taking that phone call and twisting it into a promotion for the leg ads.
Yeah.
There's certain clever things like that. What else did we talk about? I really did think that they had genuine interest in our books and like our characters and stuff like that. I thought they had good questions for us. I thought that Jennifer was very well prepared. Like, she knew certain things. Like, she even knew the name of the fish in my comic strip Curls. Like, she's like, and that's applause. Like, yeah. She knew, like, all these, like, you know, I'm not saying that everyone in the world should know, but they should. But, like, she knew things that, like, probably the average person that was just taking a quick glance at something wouldn't know. And so that's how I know she has been paying attention to us for a long time. And even, like, the sketch before sleep, like, that was a nice compliment when she was like, yeah, I used to, like, check it on Facebook and see what you'd be up to every day. And, you know, wonder what you drew that night, stuff like that. I thought that that's pretty cool that she checked in with that. I mean, sometimes it's hard because you don't hear that from people all the time, so it's good to reemphasize that. So I thought that she was like pretty up on her game with us. So that was cool too. And also, we did that University of Maryland talk too.
Oh, that's right. So let's talk, like, about that. Talk about that with
we
our
talked
last.
About that last
did we talk about
week?
That?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, but remember, we tell people that we have links to that, so now you can.
Oh
like,
yeah,
listen
I did
to that.
Actually just post it today, so you can. I guess when was it? The day before Small Press Expo, I did a panel with the guy who does Kid Beowulf, Jim Rugg, and now my mind's blanking. Monica Gallagher and Rob Ullman. We did a panel at University of Maryland. And basically, if you go to curls-studio.com and click on the production blog, or it's also in the Curls webcomic link, you will find, if you scroll down, you will see the University of Maryland recap, which includes photos and a link to the audio.
So real quick, we just got back from Intervention Con. We got at least like a 3 minutes left in this. What were your thoughts on our very first cosplay burlesque show that we enjoyed there, or that we watched in there, and then we enjoyed and watched?
It was interesting. I'm glad we went to the show.
What were your thoughts going in before? Because it's cosplay,
well,
you know?
Well, I mean, like, we've seen, like, really
a
nice
lot.
Burlesque.
You like, even said on the way back, you're like, I feel like we're spoiled from burlesque because we've seen
so
many great ones.
Yeah, we've seen, like, the Pontani sisters especially.
We've even filmed it. We photographed burlesque. It's, like, all around us.
Yeah, and, like, Peekaboo Point and stuff. So, I mean, we've seen some great burlesque. So, I had never heard of any of the performers with cosplay burlesque. So, I wasn't expecting, like, the greatest. And even when I talked to the girl at the table before we saw the show, I was like, yeah, do you guys know about the Pontani sisters? And they were like, yeah, And her reaction was pretty much like, they're good, but, you know, we don't take ourselves so seriously. Yeah. So that, like, that reaction made me think that, not to use this word in a negative way, but they're not as professional as Pontani Sisters. But I definitely think that they have fun doing what they do.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, the cosplay thing, like, just knowing that they really don't take it seriously provided into the fun. So, like, there were a couple acts that were really awesome. Like, the nurse, you said that was from Resident Evil.
Yeah.
That act.
With Nemesis, like Murder Nurse, which I said stole the show for me, Murder Nurse.
I thought that was
the best one out of there.
That was my favorite as well.
Resident Evil, Murder Nurse, but then followed by the guy. This is the first time I saw Guy Burlesque. Yeah. And I have to say.
Or Boylesque.
Boylesque. I have to say. If you're going to do it, you know, like, no matter what, I can sense quality, and I'm still going to critique it just as much as the other one, you know what I mean? And I felt like there was one that was great, you know, he had his moves down 100%, and then the other dude, the white dude, I felt like had he needed a little bit more work on his timing.
I mean, either way, like, I acknowledge that it's hard to get up on stage and take off your clothes, so.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard for me to, like, really point fingers and be like, but
I have to base it on what I saw.
I'll say this, it was fun, but there was some room for improvement.
But, like, when it goes down to it, like, I say for me, the best one out there, no offense to the rest of them, but I'm going to look at this if I was, like, a judge or something like that.
Yeah, if you're American Idol.
I say from top to bottom, each performance that Murder Nurse did won. That's why when I saw her, like, afterwards, I gave her a high, when I saw her at her booth, I gave her a high five because she deserved that. She freaking was the best one there to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I feel like anyone who did a good job, I need to give them a high five and let them know. Let them know! You know what I mean?
What was that bigger girl? She had a good act too. I forget her second one.
Oh, we'll find out. Oh, there you go, ladies and gentlemen.
Good too.
There you go, Carolyn.
It's the end.
It's the end. It's the end.
But only until next week.
That's right. Catch us on curls-studio.com, astraightproductions.com. You know what? You can see us at New York Comic Con coming up, and also Virginia Comic Con coming up at the end of October. Tune in next week. My name is Joe.
And I'm Carolyn.
Be excellent and positive to each other. Back to the future. See you guys later.